of a little bit more, about a half an hour or so. And over the course of the Chag, I think this is our eighth shiur together. Some people have been with us since the beginning of the Chag. Some people are new. We welcome you. So since the first seven shiurim, we've tried to have a mix between those which were more halakhic, those which were more divrei agada or hashkafa, some which were more closely connected to Sukkos, and those which you needed a little bit of a more broader imagination to connect to the holiday of Sukkos. But slated for tonight's shiur is a rather direct connection, and that is the halachic discussion of a phenomenon which, as far as I'm aware of, is completely unique, and therefore it's mysterious and needs hesber to the halachos of Sukkot, to the holiday of Sukkot, and that is the idea of mitzta'er, the idea that in certain circumstances a person is exempt from eating and perhaps the other things that we're supposed to be doing, such as spending time, learning, and even sleeping in the Sukkah. So if one does a survey, and I tried to do my best between the Bavli, the Yerushalmi, the Rishonim, and the Shulchan Aruch, what are some of the examples given in the classical sources for, again, all things being equal, but at least in theory, things which are mentioned in classical sources as sources of discomfort, which could serve as a situation which will be poor for Mistar? Anyone know? What are the Gemara is in Sukkah, Daf Chavav, Daf Chavtes, Yerushalmi and Perek Beis. Anyone know? What are some of the examples that the Gemara itself mentions? Anyone know offhand? So the Gemara talks about a chola. Good. One of the examples is a chola. And actually the Gemara has an even more surprising psak, which is in Shulchan Aruch, not only the chola, but also Umshamsho, even his attendant. Right? You see from there, by the way, something which is a little bit rare in our world, is that the attendant was also a from Jew. There were attendants in the Sukkah over Yom Tov also, but I don't think any of them had a Hilchos Sukkah Shailas. But that's a cultural phenomenon. But okay, chola is one of them. Good, an example of chola. What else? What other examples? Right, right. You could have the temperature. So in fact, the Gemara speaks about, and Yerushalmi speaks about extreme heat and mosquitoes. But Rashi and Daf Chafei in Sukkah talks about the cold. So it all depends on, right? It's not a surprise that Yerushalmi speaks about the heat. Rashi speaks about the cold. What else? Yeah, exactly. The Shulchan Aruch adds wind, flies, foul odors. All of those things, again, based on the Gemara and earlier sources, all of those things have sources either in the Gemara or Rishonim, and many of them are actually explicitly listed in Shulchan Aruch about temperature. The Rama has his famous exemption explanation. Rosh Hashulchan talks about this, why in Europe it was uncommon to sleep in the Sukkah, only the biggest tzaddikim slept in the Sukkah. Also mentions it was a mitzvah because of cold. Interesting, the Rama also talks about what if the lights go out? What if there are lights in the house, but the lights you had for the Sukkah went out? So you'd be mitzvah to sit in the dark to eat. So that's another example. So we have a pretty broad range of cases which meet the criteria one way or the other of mitzvah. And the issue which we want to understand, which is what I already alluded to, is how do we understand any of this? After all, as I said, think about it. Is there any other area of halacha where we have such an exemption? We have such a thing called ones. Rachmana Litzlan, someone, his arm is broken, or more severely, let's say somebody lost an arm. They can't put on tefillin. We even have a concept of onus of mammon. Let's say a person simply can't afford the expenses that are involved in a certain mitzvah. But there, it's not just that it's difficult, it's discomforting, it's uncomfortable mitzvah. It's literally impossible. It's there. You're an onus. It's onus Rachmana Patre. But that's not what we're going, that's not what we're saying. It's not impossible. You're not an onus if it's cold outside. It's just uncomfortable. If it's too hot, it's just uncomfortable. So where is such a thing, right? It's uncomfortable to wake up early for Minyan. I could tell you that every day. I would much rather stay under the covers. But that's not a patur from davening. Right? Putting on tefillin, shaking the lulav. Right? It's very hard. Sometimes you're in one of these minyanim, you're all stacked together, and you're trying to hold the sitter and keep the hand. There's no such thing. Only by sukkah do we have an idea of mitzvah. The question is, why should that be? So here we have a machlokes, seems to be in the Rishonim. We have virtually all the Rishonim and Achronim on one side, but a very strong and prominent but clear minority view on the other side. Most of the Rishonim, starting with Tosvos, and this is followed in the Poskim as well, say that really mitzvah is a subsection of another halacha. Halacha which is also unique to Sukkah, but halacha which itself seems to have a source, albeit a mysterious source, and that is the halacha which we all are familiar with, known as Teshvu Ke'ein Taduru. The idea is that when we're in the Sukkah, it's supposed to be our home. Now, ostensibly, in the way this is really meant in the Gemara itself, primarily, is it's a chumrah. Right? We're supposed to make the Sukkah our home. Teshvu Ke'ein Taduru. All the things you would do in your house, you should do in the Sukkah. However, Tosfos, and then others follow Tosfos, say that it's not just a chumrah, but it could also become a kula of sorts. Namely, that is to say, if you would be forced to live in the sukkah in a way which you never would in your house, so then that would be a violation. It's not a violation in the sense of being usher, but it's a violation in the sense that there's really nothing accomplished. There's no kiyum ha-mitzvah. The whole essence of the mitzvah is to be in the sukkah in a way that you would be in your house. But if it's simply impossible, then you're not obligated, and perhaps you don't even fulfill any kind of a mitzvah. So, for example, just to show you how far the Rishonim take this. So, easy examples are, let's say, when it's freezing, right? So, let's say the heater would break in your house. And let's say it would be, not now it's early, but let's say you were in Russia, or even for that matter, Northeast America, or some other cold climate in Europe, and there's no heat in the house, and you could be really cold at night. No question about it. It could really be cold at night. So, you know, you have your neighbors, you have your children who live around the corner. Would you stay in the freezing cold house, or would you look for something more comfortable? So if, min hastam, you would go to a place that's more comfortable, this is not, you know, you... If you had no choice, you would suffer through it. But that's not called Keshu Tein Taduru. The answer is a normal person in normal circumstances wouldn't choose to live in such circumstances. They would find another outlet. So in such a case, a person is simply exempt. Then if that's the case, then if the temperature outside in the sukkah is such that it's simply so cold, or the opposite. My parents moved to Miami in the year 2000, and after the first year, they've never been at home for one day of sukkahs because it's too uncomfortable. So people who live in those climates, and in Israel it's not that different, so people figure out, they put air conditioning, fan, other things in the sukkah, but that's really already complicated. But there's no question that the heat can be very discomforting. You know, we're all of a generation, you know, where, you know, a little bit of heat can make us very uncomfortable. So if that's the way we live, it's not, you know, this is not the time now to start giving these speeches, but I remember when we used to only have one air conditioner. I mean, that's true, and I've gotten that speech from my father in other circumstances. Right? We're a very spoiled generation, but it doesn't matter, because this is the reality of how we live now. Teshvu Ke'ein Taduru. If we weren't willing to be staying at home in such unbelievable heat, so we don't have to be outside in the sukkah under such similar heat. Interesting, to show you how far it goes, the Aruch Laner and the Mishnah Berurah both explain this about the Chola. A Chola, again, it's not as obvious, but they said the Chola also, someone who's sick. So you go to wherever you could feel better. So most times you feel best at home, right? The chola wishes that he or she could get dismissed from the hospital or the, you know, rehab facility and go home. But let's say being at home was very uncomfortable. Let's say there was, you know, again, to take a simplistic example, let's say there were steps and the person can't get up to their room, right? Or it's too crowded and it's a cluttered house and you need a bigger hospital, but all sorts of scenarios where we know where sometimes the chola is going to be more comfortable not in his or her home. So it says in Mishnah Berurah, that's in the Aruch Laner says, it's the same idea. That is a form of mitzvah which really is based on the Teshuvah Ke'ein Taduru. So then it comes a very interesting question, which is also the puzzle, so what about the shamish? The Gemara says, the Shachar says, it's not just that the chola could be potter. Even the shamish, even the attendant. So it's interesting. The Aruch HaShulchan says, no, that's even teshvu. That's even teshvu. Because your job is to be with them in the house. So that, in essence, if you are such a healthcare attendant, so then the chola's house basically became your house. Whether you're there 24-7 or you just have a 12-hour shift or whatever it is. But you become almost like a tafel to the chola. If you're really a shamish to a chola, you're the healthcare worker, so then you are an appendage almost of the chola. And therefore, that's also became your taduru for those hours of the day. And therefore, if the chola can't stay at home, the Chola can't stay in the Sukkah, then you also can't. Just as an aside, I think it's actually more of a profound, almost hashkafic insight. I saw an unbelievable idea in the Shvus Yaakov. The Shvus Yaakov was one of the great Tshuva Svarim. So when he writes about the Chola and the Mishamish, he says that the Mishamish, if the Chola is Mitztair, then the Shamish is Mitztair. Now that's the kind of Shamish that we all want to take care of our parents or ourselves when we're affirmed. Can you imagine? That's the level he assumes. That if the Chola is Mitztair, not just, well, if the Chola can't be there, so then, the Mishamish is also going to leave. No, he says, if the Chola is Mitztair, then for sure the Mishamish is also Mitztair. Doesn't need to be Potter Midin the Chola. Mishamish himself becomes Mitztair, and therefore Potter Midin, Teshvin Kaduru. It's no nafgamina for what we're talking about, but I just thought it was so striking when I saw it. But be that it may, this is all one major, predominant, majority school of thought. That the reason that, one second, the reason that you have such a day of mitzta'er, again, what's our question? Why do you have an idea of mitzta'er by sukkah? We don't have it anywhere else. So the answer is you're right. It's not a kalatura, kaltar kula type idea. It's not. That's what doesn't apply anywhere else. But just like there's every area of halacha has its own unique halachas, so we know many halachas that are unique to sukkah, one of which is teshvu ke'en teduru. So this mitzta'er is just a subsection. Because it's not about like schach or walls and dofen akuma and this and that, so we don't look at it and say, wow, obviously it's unique to sukkahs. Mitzta'er, it looks a little bit like something you could apply everywhere, so then why doesn't it? But the answer is, looks are deceiving. It's just as unique and localized and focused on the laws of sukkah as lavud and good osik and all the other things which are halachic unique mechanisms and legalisms which are unique to sukkah. So too, mitzta'er, it only applies in the laws of sukkah because it's a unique sukkah halacha based on teshuv ke'en tedur. Yeah.
Is there a difference between the first night and the rest of the night?
If we have time, we'll get to it. The answer is maybe. Machlokus Rishonim. I'm not discussing now if you have to wait for rain or not. That's a subsection of your question. But your more basic question, which is the halacha of mitzta'er shaykh on the first night, is a machlokus Rishonim. So if we have time, even though wherever you were for the first night, it's not the first night anymore, but it's good Torah Lishma. So if we have time, we'll get back to it, okay? That's all the first approach. So who's going to take on Tosfos and the whole weight of all the other poskim? As far as I know, it goes back to the earliest, is the Maharik. The Maharik, Rav Yosef Kolon, was one of the great Italian Rishonim. He was one of the great, you know, we think of the contributions of the Rishonim, we think obviously of Spain and Sfarad, and then of course there's France and other parts of Ashkenaz, but a place that sometimes gets overlooked, which again, clearly in quantity, for sure were less Gedolim from Italy, but there were some great, great, great Rishonim and early Achronim that came out of Italy as well, and one of the real greats was the Maharik, Rav Yosef Kolon. So he has in his tshuva the following idea. He says something which at first is inexplicable, but then the Achronim explain it and we'll understand what he means. Says Rav Yosef Kolon, says the Maharik has nothing to do with Teshuv Ke'en Teduru. Rather, what does it mean? If you're uncomfortable in the sukkah, you're mitzta'er, pick whatever scenario it is. You're mitzta'er because it's too cold, you're mitzta'er because it's too hot, you're mitzta'er because there's bees everywhere, cicadas, whatever the case may be. What's the problem? Says the Maharik, because of the mitzta'er, you can't concentrate on the mitzvah. You can't concentrate on why you're there in the first place. You're too preoccupied. Because you're mitzta'er, therefore you can't concentrate. You don't have enough, you can't halt kup, you can't focus on what are you doing there to begin with. So at first glance, as I say, it seems a little bit inexplicable. This is like a mitzvah tzrichas kavana idea. That, you know, the kavana we talk about when we say mitzvah tzrichas kavana means that you know you're doing it for a mitzvah. Here, no one suggests that because there's lots of flies or it's too hot, you won't know that you're doing it for a mitzvah. Why else are you doing it? So what is he talking about? So here, I think the Achronim are, I don't think they're speculating. I think they're just saying something which you have to say. It's just mukhruch, this is what he means. He just doesn't explicate it as well as we would have liked. And this, you can find this in the Taz explicitly. And that is, it's based on a different chiddush that we have in Hilchos Sukkah. It's actually I'm afraid to ask my children if they remember it, but I could tell you that I tell them this every year on the first night of Sukkot. It doesn't mean they remember it, but I do tell them that every year on the first night, without all the Torah and the Mar Makomos. And that is that there is an idea which goes back perhaps as early as the Bach, although now we see maybe implicitly it goes back even earlier to the Marik, that there's a unique halach of kavana by Sukkah that we don't have in general. Yes, it's true generally when we say mitzvos, tzrichos, kavana. You have to have intent when you fulfill the mitzvah. So we mean you shouldn't think you're just practicing or playing house or games. You're doing this for a mitzvah. Aye, but aren't there all these books of Tameha mitzvos, and there's the rationalist school and the mystical school, and there's the more modern description of Al-Hirsch, and now you'll have the, you know, Nesiva Shalom says this. No, we're not talking about any of that. That's nice and it's good, but that's not mitzvah tzrichos kavana. Those are all extra things. Says the Bach, and actually Rav Yaakov Ettlinger in his Sefer on Shulchan Aruch Bikur Yaakov paskins this way. The first night of Sukkot is different. The first night of Sukkot is not just enough, and in Chutz Laaretz be the first two nights, it's not just enough to know you're sitting in the Sukkah for the sake of a mitzvah. You have to know why you're doing it. What's the tam? And this has nothing to do with whether you're a chassid or a misnagid and you prefer the svasemis and you prefer Soloveitchik or you prefer... Doesn't you do... Everyone's got the nice drushes on the sukkah. This is much more basic. Says in the Pasuk, L'man yedu deruseichem, every generation has to know that why are we sitting in the sukkah? He was sukkos ha'shafti, because I put you in sukkos when I took you out of Mitzrayim. So that's the machlokes tanoim, if it's sukkos mamish, or the anane ha'kovot, we should speak about that also. But sure enough, the Bach quotes this, and as I said, in the Bikur Yaakov, that Me'ikr Hadin on the first night of Sukkot, if you have, of course you know you're there for a mitzvah. You have all the normal kavan in mind, but you don't think of that. You don't add that one layer deeper of why we're doing it, to commemorate what Hashem did for us when we went out of Mitzrayim. So according to those poskim, again, I'm not saying everyone agrees, but they say you're not Yotze on the first night. That is a din in the first night, a special halacha for the mitzvah of sukkah, mid'oraisa. So says the Taz, you thought that only went back to the Bach. Apparently, implicitly, it goes back even earlier. It goes all the way back to the Marik. Because that's what the Marik meant. Although here the Chiddush is, it's a little bit, you have to, it's a little rough around the edges, we have to smooth it over. Because it seems that the Marik is not only talking about the first night. He seems to be saying, again, it's not as a chiyuv, but at least as a value, as a concept to be aware of, and it could impact the halacha, it could apply the whole week, all 7 days of Sukkot. And that is that if you are unable to have kavana for this deeper idea of what are we doing in the Sukkah, it's not just it's a mitzvah, but there's a deeper idea of commemorating what Hashem did for us, I'm not aware of that, so then there's no point. There is no mitzvah. And therefore, and the Taz bases himself on that, and we're going to see a nafka mina in a minute, but we now have really crystallized a second view. We have a very interesting machlokas. We ask the question, where do we have? And the answer is we don't. We have no other area of halacha where such a concept called mitzta'er, just because it's difficult. Right? We know de facto there are many Jews who didn't and who don't do mitzvos because it's hard. But that's not a halacha. That's a problem. As far as I'm aware of, there's no other area of halacha where we say mitzta'er is pater from tefillin. Mitzta'er is pater from tefillah. If you're so, so debilitated that you're an ones, that's a very different story. But here we're talking about something much lower than that. So it's the cold, it's the heat, it's the rain, let's, for argument's sake, call the rain too, the mosquitoes, whatever it is. It's so uncomfortable. So why are you pater? So one opinion, the majority view based on Tosfos is Teshvu Ke'en Tuduru. If your house was infested with mosquitoes, you wouldn't stay in the house either. If your house was freezing because the air conditioning, the heater didn't work, or the opposite, if you're in a place like Eretz Yisrael and there was no air conditioning and you couldn't breathe, you were so hot and stifling, the kind of way we were when we came into Mincha tonight. Right, Baruch Hashem, the air conditioner at least works good. It took about a minute for the room to cool down. But until they turned on the AC, I assume I wasn't the only one who was really perspiring. So the heat could be debilitating if it's really stuffy like that. So you wouldn't stay in your house either. I wouldn't have wanted to daven mincha if they hadn't turned on. It would have been very hard to concentrate. So that's one approach based on teshuv de'en kaduru. Not only can there be external circumstances, the heat, the cold, the mosquitoes. What if you're just in pain? You're in terrible pain. You're very mitzta'er. And because of that, if I would, go, that's why that's not the way I would, you know, I'm not comfortable. That's one possibility. One second. However, we saw now with this other second minority view, the second possibility. And that is, it's not based on Teshuk into Duru, it's based on this other idea of Kavana, but not the run-of-the-mill Kavana, but the fact that Sukkah, certainly the first night, and perhaps it's implied even beyond, if we want to really, truly fulfill the mitzvah, it's not enough to just be aware that we're sitting in a Sukkah and not a pergola, that it's a mitzvah and not just a habit or a hobby. No, it's more than that. We have to understand why we're doing it, the historical commemoration, Laman Yedu Doroseichem, and therefore perhaps if we're in pain, so we all know when we're in pain, I mean, unfortunately we've all been in pain at some point in our lives, if you really have, it could be a back pain, you hurt your arm, whatever, you have a splitting headache, it's hard to concentrate. You would think about something more sublime, historical, who has a head for that when you're so uncomfortable? So that's what the Ma'arik and the Taz say. Two approaches to why there's this unique phenomena called Mitzta'er in Sukkah. So take a question in a second, then afterwards we'll try to see a nafkamina, and then we'll try to broaden the discussion even more to other areas of Sukkah. Yeah.
I can explain the whole thing, because only in Sukkah is a simachta l'chagecha, union of simcha.
Okay.
There is no simcha, then you're not...
So that's connected also. Okay, fair enough. Good. That's also connected. Someone else have a question back? Yeah, please.
Why didn't the Kayah in the Amore, in the Gemara, in the Pet, where the 12th time of Sukkah
Shama? Right. I hear your question. It's an excellent question, but I think I didn't think about it, but I think what you're referring to is that Gemara would, the problem of a Sukkah Yeshana, a Sukkah, let's say for example, like the pergolas that are popular in Israel. So some people leave, in our neighborhood there has to be one family, they might say, leave the Schach on the whole year. So that's a Gemara. What do you do about that? You can't just leave it. You have to do something, right? Certainly more than 30 days, the whole year for sure. So, but the problem with that is that if you don't do that, then you don't even have the more basic kavana of doing it for a mitzvah. That's classic kol tarakula mitzvah sriches kavana. When I put it up because I like the shade the whole summer, and then I left it up, and I'm just going to, you know, keep up and put on some walls around it, or maybe there's even walls for Sukkah. So then I don't even have the kavana of a mitzvah, because I did it for something else. What we're saying now is, no, even if I have the kavana that I'm doing it for a mitzvah, do I understand the more deeper level? Why is there a mitzvah? I think this is a little bit different, okay? Good. So let's move on. So first of all, what is it? I almost gave it away, and it is from somewhat... obvious. If it's not obvious yet to you, it'll be obvious once I say it. What's the nafkamina to this question? What if leaving the sukkah won't help the tzar? Right, there are certain times where a person is in tzar when they're in the sukkah, and if they go out of the sukkah into the house, then there's not going to be any more tzar. But there's plenty of time. That's classic, obvious mitzvah. What about a different case? Let's say the tsar is because a person broke their ankle. They just did it. They were hand gliding or parasailing, whatever they call this thing, which my kids want me to do with them tomorrow, off the cliff here right outside the hotel. And Mamish, when they landed, they did a hard land on the foot. This is, of course, what I've been fearful for the last few days, what's going to happen, Rahman al-Islam. And they really hurt themselves. So now, they're in a lot of pain in the sukkah. They're definitely mitzvah. Unlike, well, usually when they complain, they really have what to complain about. But what's going to happen? I'm going to bring him inside. It'll be just as much pain. It's not connected to the sukkah. So what do you say? Does the patur mitzvah even apply then or not?
No.
So this is taka, machlokas haposkim. Very interesting machlokas. This is quoted in Simin Tov Reish Mem, 640, in Or Chaim, the Ramah, and from him the Levush, and the Mishnah Berurah, and the Aruch HaShulchan. Again, the majority view is, in such a case, then there's no exemption. It's ridiculous. The whole idea is that the sukkah is being mitzvah you because of the heat, because of the cold, because of the flies. So if I'll go inside, then I'm not mitzvah anymore. That makes sense. But there is a minority view. The Taz seems to say in the Mikroi Kodesh of Tzipi Pesach Frank, clear to me if he's passing this way, or at least explaining in the Lomdus, but Tzipi Pesach Frank quotes this, and sure enough, in the Marik, it seems to be pretty clear, that they hold no. Once you are a mitzvah, a bona fide mitzvah, then you're putter from the sukkah. Period. Even though when you'll go inside in your house, in the hotel, wherever you are, you're not going to feel necessarily better, a little better, but you're still in pain, no question about it. You say it doesn't matter. Once you're mitzvah, then there is no mitzvah. So what's the pshat? So sure enough, it seems to be clear in the earlier achronim, but in the postgame, maybe even rishonim, but certainly Rabbi Pesach Frank, for example, says this very clearly, says this is a nafka mina to our question. If you hold it's based on teshu ke'en taduru, so then it makes sense. Everyone would rather be at home. What happened? My home has no, the air conditioning blew, I'm sweating like crazy. So if the neighbor down the block, if my children around the corner have air conditioning, I'll go to their house. But let's say the whole neighborhood, right? My friend Jeremy told me that on, was it Shabbos? In Chashmonaim, the transformer blew 3 hours before Shabbos was over, somewhere in late afternoon. The whole yeshiv had no electricity. So it's hard to be in the dark, and probably that, in such a short period of time, that end of the day probably didn't get too uncomfortable. But let's say what happened in the morning. So you'd been baking in your house by the end of the day. But there would have been no need to go to your neighbor's house, because they didn't have any air conditioning either. They're also in the dark, and they're also sweltering. So, teshuva ke'en tadur only means I would only live that way. Yes, you're right, so we would live uncomfortably if we could avoid it. But when everyone on the yeshuv, when everyone in the neighborhood has it, you're not going to leave. So too, maybe not everyone has it. But you have a broken leg, chas v'shalom, or you have a terrible headache, or whatever, but it has nothing to do with the air. Inside, outside, upside down, right side, it doesn't matter. You're in pain. After rachmanis, I'm not being callous. But for the sake of hilchos sukkah, it's irrelevant. So they say, therefore, of course, it makes sense. The p'tur makes no sense to have an exemption in such a case. However, as Rabbi Pesach Frank explains, and again, it seems to be clear, even in the earlier sources, if you hold that the p'tur of mitzta'er is based on the fact that sukkah requires a higher level kavana, the usual standards, the bar is usually set, is now raised for sukkah, amani yeidu daroseichem, at least on the first night, if not, perhaps even beyond. So whenever you have something like that, you have to take a certain amount of concentration. A person who's really mitzta'er to the point that they can't concentrate on that higher level of the deeper ta'am ha-mitzvah. So then they're exempt. But when they go inside, they still can't? You're right. And maybe they want to stay. And if they want to stay outside, I don't know if we call them a hedge out necessarily, the way the Yerushalmi does about rain. But the point is, but they're certainly allowed to go inside. But it's not going to help them. It doesn't hurt either, because they can't accomplish what they need to accomplish. At that point, there's really no need to be in the sukkah, and really, ostensibly, it's hard to see anything gained if you really hold that you need to have this higher level of kavana. Everyone understand? Any questions on this idea? So two basic approaches, and one very important, very interesting nafka mina. But let's move on now, I have a little bit more time. Let's move on to a second and related area, which comes up, certainly came up, was a big, big battle in parts of Europe, and not as relevant in Eretz Yisrael, Baruch Hashem, but it could be relevant perhaps in other places, certainly in Chutz Laaretz even today. And that is, let's say you live in an environment, perhaps in certain neighborhoods once upon a time, maybe even still it could be a safety issue, but certainly it could have been and has been an issue of weather, where it's one thing to eat in the sukkah, but it would be too uncomfortable to sleep in the sukkah. Like this came up in Europe. This is the famous discussion about how come no one was sleeping in the sukkah in Eastern Europe. And not that there aren't other explanations, but the most common and probably the most plausible explanation, which is quoted in Poskim, is that it was just too cold. What do you mean if it was too cold? Didn't they eat in the sukkah? And the answer is not a shaila. Lunch for sure is not a shaila. It's the afternoon. But even dinner, it's one thing to sit in the sukkah to have dinner. We're all, you know, whatever your level of comfort required is, but it's a whole other level when it comes to sleeping. You add to the fact that there could be issues of safety. They say there are stories that, I heard conflicting stories whether Rav Moshe Feinstein ever slept in the sukkah. I heard in the name of the Tendlers that he never did because it wasn't safe on the Lower East Side. In his day, how could you sleep in the sukkah? You'd be nervous. But then I heard in the name of somebody else, they told me, a very simple family, Baal Batsh family from the Lower East Side, they said that the Tendlers don't realize, but he did sleep in the sukkah. How do we know this? because we stood guard to make sure nothing happened to him. We had a rotation in the sukkah, outside the sukkah, to make sure he'd be okay. I have not been able to, I don't know if I could ever verify these stories, but I did hear of such stories. So you can imagine, again, whether it's certain neighborhoods in Chutz-Lartz, perhaps, depending on where one lives, maybe even in parts of Eretz Yisrael, where it's one thing during the day, you feel safe, you're awake, it's one thing, you're not worried about anything happening to you, but you're going to go to sleep for 7-8 hours overnight, maybe. So what's the halacha? If you have a scenario, and let's take weather to take the more direct comparison, where a sukkah is mitzta'er, and therefore it's really not capable to allow you to fulfill one aspect of the mitzvah, but yet you could fulfill a different aspect. I'll give you a third example, which is where it's also machlokes. What about a sukkah, right? There's the big discussion about the minimum size of a sukkah. I'm sure, I mean, if you haven't yet been to the display that they have here in, not that far from outside of Yerushalayim, where they have all the different sukkahs of the Mishnayos and Masechta Sukkah, right? No, Kedumim. I've been there once or twice. It's certainly kedai to go. Probably every few years you should review. If your kids have learned Masechta Sukkah, it's really a nachas to go and let them have that experience where you see the tall sukkah, the teeny sukkah, the tipi sukkah, the agala sukkah, the sfina sukkah. It's really fascinating. So let's say you have a sukkah that meets the minimum requirements for sukkah. So it's one thing you could kind of get yourself in there to eat, but there's no way you'd be able to lie down and sleep in it. So is that called a sukkah or not? Your mitzvah, you can't really, I mean, you couldn't sleep in there. You'd be way too uncomfortable, especially someone who's relatively tall. But to see, you know, to crunch in, to eat a kazayis, you could do. So interestingly enough, this is a machlokes between the Ramah and the Chacham Tzvi. We mentioned the Chacham Tzvi last night, in a completely different context, but the same Chacham Tzvi, the follower of Yaakov Emden. So the Ramah is really based maybe on a Mordechai or a Yireim. The Ramah is based on earlier Shittos, where the Ramah says a tremendous chiddush and a huge chumrah. The Ramah says if a sukkah is not roi to be a sukkah for one aspect of the mitzvah, then you're not supposed to use it for any aspect of the mitzvah. Therefore, the Ramah says, he's talking specifically about, if let's say if you can't sleep in the sukkah because of the robbers, or you can't work, can't do it because of the cold, so then that's not a sukkah that's right to eat in it either. It's a tremendous chumrah if we would accept this Ramah at face value. So the Chacham Tzvi, the Tshuva Simen Tzadi Dalet, he goes, listen, he doesn't understand this Ramah. He has a number of rayas against the Ramah, but we don't have time to get into the details. I'm not, each of the individual rayas to me were never so persuasive. Sometimes when you're learning, you know, the more you have experience, you get this chush, you get a sense. Sometimes it's the raya, the evidence which is driving the shita. But sometimes, you know, and again, maybe not for you and me, but if you're the Chacham Tzvi, sometimes that, you know, the gadol, they just have it in their kishkas. They have a chush that this can't be right. Or that, you know, they know what they think is for sure true, and they're trying to give rayas to support it. But sometimes you get a sense that, like, they had that, and then they went looking for rayas. And other times you get a sense, no, they read the Gemara, I guess the conclusion is X or Y. So here, I think, sometimes you get this, Rav Rosenzweig used to speak about this a lot, and Rav Rosenzweig, in the right circumstance, with the right gadol, he feels 100% legitimate. 100% legitimate to have a certain chush. Havalach, I just tell you a quick story, just as an aside, such a beautiful story. I once heard this, I think originally from Rav Shechter, but I remember Rabbi Shalom Rosner and I, after we heard it from Rav Shechter, we ran to go tell Rabbi Rosenzweig this story, because we had been hearing for so many years this idea of the chush and the halachic intuition, as Rosenzweig likes to refer to it as. So the story goes that the Chasam Sofer, whenever he used to get a shiloh, he used to dictate the content of the tshuva to his son, Rabbi Avram, who became known as the Ksav Sofer, and then the Ksav would write it up and send it out. Or other times, maybe he would write up the tshuva, but then he would leave it on the desk, and the Ksav Sofer was supposed to, you know, put the shtempel on and close it and send it in the mail. So he had a pile of tshuvas on the table, and one day he comes back a week later, and he sees that his son sent out all the tshuvas except for one. So he said to him, Rabbi Avramel, why didn't you send out this tshuva? Said, Michael Zayn, you know, he tried very much to be respectful to his father, but I took a peek. You know, that raya had in the Tosfos and Chulin, it's not such a good raya. I'm not sure that that's really correct. So he looked at him and he said, the tshuva is correct. Whether the raya is a good raya or not, we could talk about another time. But the psak is the psak. That I know is for sure, with or without rayas. See, not everyone's the Chasam Sofer. And you have to be careful. Some people think that the Chasam Sofer, unfortunately. You know, they shoot first, aim second. But that's not what's going on here. This is not irresponsible. This is responsible. But when you have someone who's a Baal Mesorah, so sometimes they have a chush, they have an intuition of what the right halacha is. whether you know exactly the, you know, where the raya is fitting or not. So you're also, again, this is just my own little editorial, but when I read this Chacham Tzvi, I kind of felt like that was what's going on here also. He just couldn't be sovel. He couldn't imagine that Rama would be right. How could, just because I can't sleep in the sukkah, I can't eat in the sukkah? Mind you, sleeping is eating. They're two separate mitzvos. Two separate aspects of the mitzvah even. But what's the connection? So he goes back and forth on this. And there's a discussion of Prima Gadim, and the Mishnah Brura quotes this, and Bidyavid were Mekel. I mean, this, again, if you think about it, I mean, I assume some of the wheels were turning already for people. This would have puzzled every sukkah in Eastern Europe. Right? They didn't, if you're telling me the reason they didn't sleep in the sukkah is because it's too cold, so why is it mutter to eat in the sukkah? So you could say we reject the Ramah. Or some say, well, the Ramah only meant the Lachachilin Abidyavid, or some Achronim say, well, that's only if it's truly impossible to sleep in the sukkah. But it is, in theory, even in Russia, in the September, October, early October, you could have put on layer upon layer. You could have done it. So it would have been So maybe that wouldn't meet his criteria. Could be, but it's still, it's a difficult. So the Ramah, Mishnah Berurah says, Bidyavid, we're Mekel. But it is a Ramah. So what's the pshat? How could it be? You know, we can understand, I think, you know, without polling the audience, my sense is that instinctively, Chacham Tzvi makes a lot of, you know, it's such a surprising chumrah. So I think what they're getting at, which is really very interesting, is this whole idea of mitzvah, perhaps the larger issue of Teshuva Kein Teduro. I don't mean to sound cliche, but I think this is really what's going on here. Is that a din in the Gavra, or is that a din in the Chefza? I mean, what does that define? What does that regulate? If you hold the Teshvu Ka'in Teduru means that the Cheftza, the Sukkah, has to be one which, for said issues, said it has to be replicable as if it was your home. Teshvu Ka'in Teduru has to be like your Dira. So then, as the Ramah says, I mean, you know, unless you're just so, so fabulously wealthy and a little bit meshuggah, people don't usually have a house where they eat and then another house where they sleep. That's not a regular form of a dira. If you can't sleep there, not just by choice, because I'm so well, I can't sleep in there, but I eat there. That's not a normal way of living, right? Most people have a house in which they could sleep and eat there, whether they have three houses, four houses, or five houses, but they usually do both when they're in whatever house that is. So if you hold that Teshu Kein Teduru is a din in the Cheftza, so then, I'm not saying it's right. It's still, that itself is surprising. But that seems to me the only explanation of the Ramah. Whereas the Chacham Tzvi seems to be going with what I think we would consider probably a little bit more, shall I say, intuitive. And that is that, no, Teshuv Kein Teduru is not a din in the Cheftza. We have enough halachos about the Cheftza of the Sukkah. Teshuv Kein Teduru is a halach about me, about the person. I have to, l'chulo or l'chumra, fulfill my mitzvah of Sukkah as if this has become my home for the week. I just want to mention one last issue because we only have a few more minutes anyway, and it was brought up, which is what about the first night? How does this relate? So, Baruch Hashem, I don't think it rained anywhere. Was anyone aware it rained the first night? I was in Yerushalayim last year for Sukkot, and it rained the first night. Anyone remember that? The first night of Sukkot last year, if you're in Yerushalayim, it did rain. At the program, at the hotel that we were at, so with my kids, they were all tired and cranky and antsy, so it wasn't exactly the most wonderful, spiritual, uplifting Yontif meal, but had the benefit of it went very fast. So we were already benching when all of a sudden the rain came down. But there was other families, maybe they had more Divrei Torah at their meals, or maybe they just took longer to get to the sukkah. Whatever the case may be, they were right early in the meal, and all of a sudden the rain came down. And let's just say that, you know, it's hard enough when that happens in your house, but no hotel is ready for that. It was a balagan shein kamohu. So I'm not discussing the whole issue of rain on the first night and waiting. That's beyond the scope of, we have two more minutes. But just to mention the fundamental question of does mitzta'er play a role on the first night? So you may be surprised, but the Ramah Paskins, Mitof Reish Mem, Siv Dalad, no. There's no halacha of mitzta'er on the first night, and therefore, even if you're mitzta'er on the first night, you have to have a kazayas in the sukkah. The question is, why not? So one answer, which the tour seems to say, is that as opposed to the rest of the holiday where we know, in theory, if you wanted to have apples and, I don't know, candy the whole week, you could figure out a way to avoid eating in the sukkah. It's a mitzvah kiyumis to eat in the sukkah, but you don't have to. It's not a chiyuv. But on the first night, there's a chiyuv. So maybe mitzvah only applies when it would be a kiyum. But mitzvah is not enough to get me out of the chiyuv of the first night. That's the tour's implication. The Rashba says no. The Rashba says no. Even on the first night, the rule of teshuk and tadur applies. Not just, doesn't matter that that's a chiyuv. It's even on the first night. So then how come you have to have at least a kezayis? So the Mishnah Berurah says, ein hachanami. According to the Rashba, logically you wouldn't have to do anything. But we're not sure. We're not sure who's right, the Torah or the Rashba. And therefore, since we're talking about a daraisa on the first night of Sukkot, so we say safek l'chumra. You don't have to have your whole meal there, but at least have a kezayis. And the Mishnah Berurah adds, which is no surprise at this point, whenever we're doing something only misafek, the Mishnah Berurah says in such circumstances, therefore, we wouldn't make a bracha. So if a person was really mitztayer to the point that they had to go inside, the Mishnah Berurah's rule, based on the Safek and the Rishonim, is that you would at least have your kezayis inside, but you wouldn't make a bracha. So hopefully we should never be mitztayer. We should hope it shouldn't be rain, so on the first night. But if so, it is perhaps at least misafek, a little bit of a difference, halacha, from anything else.